Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Paul Maurice, universally panned. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend, the Braun from Fort Richmond, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, Vaughn?
I'm feeling a little unlucky today, which is entirely appropriate, as it's the 13th episode of the Airport Lounge podcast.
It is.
Let me tell you, Mike, I think the Jets squandered an incredible opportunity to win a second playoff series, and overall, it was due to an incredible, unlucky convergence of circumstances in Game 1, which set the tone for the entire series. The Jets were simply and utterly unable to overcome the loss of Scheifele and DeMelo, and I'm sure we'll spend a few minutes talking about that today.
Oh, you launched right into it. I like it. We seem to have bad Game 1 luck, but we'll get into that further down the road. I did want to, real quick, before we break down not only the utter collapse that was the Montreal Canadiens series where we got swept, but then I think after that we'll look to maybe peer into the future a bit and see what we think the Jets will do and what we surmise they might do in the future. And then in the end, we'll look at the season overall, not on any sort of micro level, but on a macro scale, whether or not the Jets' season as a totality was a success or not. Sound good?
Let's go.
I just want to give a quick shout out. You're a haircut guy. I've known that for a while.
A little bit.
You take enormous pleasure. It's therapeutic. How's your flow? Are you rocking the Scheifele do, like, or are you 80s hairband level right now without being able to get your hair cut?
Well, my salad, my lettuce, as the hockey players refer to it, cabbage. It's not in great shape. It's very Q-tippy right now. It resembles much more of a Q-tip than anything that you might otherwise see on an adult male. So I'm very much in need of someone to do, and you know, Mike, I don't know if I've told you this. I found a great hairstylist, I guess, barber, and great. She does a great job. She immigrated to Canada from China, and she took a vacation back to China just as COVID was hitting, and she's hasn't been able to work her way back to Canada yet. So I am without anyone to help me, basically, with my lettuce and salad. So I'm a little bit at a loss right now.
You're Tom Cruise 4th of July going at it now. I've got more of like an aging Ace Ventura look where the sides are longer than the top. It's like a salt and pepper flock of seagulls. It's quite it's quite the thing. But I did want to give a shout out to Kate at the Good Fortune Barber. They opened up a new place in South Osborne, and as luck would have it, that right in the middle of a pandemic. But the place is fantastic, and she's fantastic, and she's a frequent listener and has always had positive things to say, so I wanted to give her a shout-out.
Well, you'll have to pass along her her location, address, and contact details, because I'm in need of someone new, and I don't know if, you know, I'm not giving her much to work with, but I'm willing to I'm willing to give it a shot, show up, and, you know, take it one shift at a time, get pucks deep, all that type of thing.
Nice. Like it.
Well, for my shout out, I have a bit of an interesting one. I'd like to shout out to my mom. I know on a previous podcast, I mentioned that my mom didn't, and dad don't know what a podcast is. My dad's still in that boat, but my mom has recently learned that I have a podcast, and she's checked it out. And
she sure has.
Yeah, she has. And as Mike now knows, we receive a full review of each episode via text message from my mom.
It's fantastic.
It really is fantastic art. Yeah, it's like one of those hieroglyphs on a side of an obelisk. It's got emojis and you know, different things in there. And I can share, based on an assessment of our recent episode, that she wants us to leave Paul alone.
Yeah.
Because he wears nice ties. Apparently, my mom and her friends text each other each game with an evaluation of the tie that Paul Maurice is wearing on that particular evening, and they're big fans.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. She reminded me, my sister, who lives in France, born here but now lives in France, her favorite player is Mathieu Perreault, and she's got an 85 jersey, and she rocks that around France when the Jets are playing. So, yeah, thanks for listening, Mom. Also, can I borrow the car?
Even at 50, we're still looking for handouts. Vaughn shared the text that was sent, or the text in the past couple weeks, and so I echo the thank you for listening, and they're really great, and they're enthusiastic and constructive. So kudos all the way around. All right, let's get to check-in time. Okay, I don't know where to start, man. There's just a confluence of hot garbage to go through. I guess just at the top, maybe from 30,000 feet, you know, the facts and statistics and neat tidbits start to trickle in after you get waxed 4-0. And I saw a few things, one being that was sort of noted as the single most dominant sweep in 14 NHL seasons. Yeah. You know, and that's an evolving hockey expected goals metric. But regardless of what you think of that stat, just not a good place to be. And what struck me was in game four, and I know we'll be hopping around a bit, but after the third period when we were going into OT, in an elimination game, Montreal spent 39 minutes in our end, and we had spent in totality 17 minutes in the offensive end. Now, we'll have plenty of opinions on the why and how of this, but that's just unacceptable. Like you just can't put forth that kind of effort in an elimination game, and it was obviously quite disheartening. Like when Logan Stanley accounts for 33.3333% of your goal scoring in a playoff series, problems exist. Yeah. So I look at this, and we're going to get into what we think might happen in the future, but recent past here, just a terrible showing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, if I could report as Captain Obvious here, it was a very disappointing outcome. Each game was a unique disaster in its own way. You know, like hurricanes are named to distinguish one from the other, perhaps each game should be christened with names. I have game one as the crash. Game two is the shutout. Game three could be called the domination. And game four, I would deem the burial.
You've got a novel there.
Yeah.
Send that into Penguin.
it was something else. And I'll tell you what, it's been well established on this podcast that I'm a huge fan of Mark Scheifele. He's also someone that's caught a lot of heat on social media and from Jets fans about certain aspects of his play leading up and like through the course of the regular season. Mm-hmm. He doesn't back check, they say. He isn't committed to defending in his own, people say. And there is certainly some truth to those accusations, if we want to call them that. But let us never, never, ever again question his importance to this team. This team was absolutely lost without him. And there was nothing happening up front. You know, perhaps a small spark from Ehlers at times. But at the same time, Paul Maurice doesn't play Ehlers enough for him to have a grand impact over the course of the full game. And that's a different issue we can talk about. And listen, this isn't to be little. I fully acknowledge the best player on this team is the goalie, Connor Hellebuyck. And in no way by saying that do I want to diminish the impact that removing Dylan DeMello had on this.
Okay, that's what I was gonna get to, but yeah, I'm glad you did.
But I'm telling you, you know, in terms of players that aren't goalies, the out players, Mark Scheifele is the guy that stirs the drink, right? They were just lost. They looked defeated. They looked disinterested. They looked undisciplined. I could go on. Mike, what do you think?
Right. So I don't disagree on the whole. I was taken aback a bit because I had thought, and I think it was before game two, you and I might have been going back and forth, and I had said, I don't think the loss of Scheifele is as significant as the loss of DeMelo, and there are a number of reasons for that. The primary one being that you take DeMelo away from Morrissey, now you've lost basically two players rather than one, because without DeMelo, Morrissey is, you know, both statistically and just his play has been below average. But I agree, just on the offensive end, we and the power play, you're right. He's the straw that stirs the drink, and it was palpable and it was noticeable. I do think that they had this issue in game one as well with Scheifele in it for all of the, you know, for the duration of game one, 59 minutes. That's what I was looking for. And so I don't, you know, it's a small sample size and I can't tell if this was just general malaise throughout and him being out was just causality of their terrible play. But you can't look at how they finished out the series and say that, well, yeah, obviously Scheifele is a very key cog in this machine. When you were talking, you were saying they say this and they say that. That's me. I've been saying that for a while now, that his defensive play and his effort back check wise and anything not related to a scoring chance is to be desired, or leave something to be desired. So I'm in that camp, but his ability to generate offense is him and Ehlers are the two, right? And so him being out was it contributed significantly to the loss. And one of the biggest things was I didn't understand why it seemed to me anyway, from the outside looking in, that we didn't have that, and I'm going to call it an Applebee's moment. What's an Applebee's moment?
Applebee's has rats! I found a whole rat macabre salad!
For the longest time, I was a server at Applebee's. Bourbon Street Steak, really good. And at the time, they had smoking section and non-smoking section. And every Friday and Saturday night, I got assigned to the smoking section where invariably there would be a group of like 12 or 13 teenagers who would come in and smoke cigarettes, order two baskets of fries and some iced teas, and then leave me no tip. And at a certain point, I told my manager, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. And he summarily dismissed my concerns and was like, oh, you'll do whatever we tell you to do. And I had a one night, same group came in, they left me a tip of pennies in a smiley face. So when they were leaving, I got up, grabbed the pennies, and they're going to their car, and I chucked it at them, and I said, you're not welcome in here anymore. I had no authority to do that. And I just had it. I was like, I don't care the ramifications of this. I'm getting abused here. I need to stick up for myself. And I know an Applebee's analogy and professional sports is weak sauce, but there was no Applebee's moment from anybody on the Jets. Mark Scheifele doesn't count, because that was a completely separate, that wasn't sticking up. That was just, he lost his mind temporarily, in my opinion. But there was no moment where I thought as a unit, they said, I'm tired of getting beat to loose pucks. I'm tired of playing in my own end. I'm tired of being like that, the graphic they kept showing on Hockey Night in Canada, where they hadn't trailed in 300 hours or whatever it was. It just, there never seemed to be a light switch that went off that say, we're done. We might go out hard, but at least we're going to give it our all every single second that we're on the ice. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, or I'm being a little too harsh on them, but that was one of my bigger takeaways, is that we just sort of limped quietly into the night.
Yeah, you know, I see it a little bit differently. I have to say, I'm not saying that they did. I do think that they reacted like you did in that situation. I felt that they were completely undisciplined, unmotivated, and frustrated for the back half of that series, and that they were running around. They weren't playing any type of tight shape of defense. They were staring at the puck. I mean, they weren't putting in the effort. They would get hemmed in their zone and they would just stand there. And I felt that, you know, I guess we're saying the same thing in the way that there wasn't a spirited pushback, but, you know, in terms of your analogy, I kind of did see them grabbing a bunch of pennies and throwing it at the Montreal Canadiens and not really caring what the outcome would be. So, you know, it was very disheartening. But I think we're getting close to being on the same page here, because, you know, I see it as being disheartening because they didn't play anywhere close to, like, they were so bad with a bad roster. Like, they didn't even play to their potential. You know, there was no game like there was against Calgary after Laine and Scheifele got hurt in game one and they came back and won game two. There's that pushback, that sort of band together, sort of come together moment. And they found a way to snap victory from the jaws of defeat. But in this, it was just like they just knew it. Their body language was horrible throughout the entire, there was no joy in Joyville. And I do think that, you know, going back to what we talked about in previous podcasts, about my fear about Carey Price shutting them out. And then he does in game two.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's utterly deflating for a team that's already depleted. This is a team that struggles to move the puck out of their zone in the best of times. And now you've lost DeMello, and like you said, and Morrissey. At least spiritually, we've lost Morrissey
right.
at that point.
He's there in body.
So we cannot, and we put in Jordy Benn, who cannot move. He moves worse than Derek Forbort.
Which is almost impossible.
So this is a team that can't move the puck out of their own zone, and now we don't have and then now the forwards, as we've discussed in previous episodes, they get no support from the defense in the offensive zone. They don't jump up into the play. They just stand at the point and shoot the puck. Are we the number one team in the league in hitting our own players from the point? We have to be.
It's like a dubious stat, but I would love if somebody had actually tracked that metric, because I would bet thousands of dollars that you're absolutely correct. We lead the league in that.
Oh, it's just crazy. And to see other teams like just fire the puck from the point and they get deflections in front of the net like Montreal did a few times, or just simply get the puck on the net. And we just end up, you know, taking a slap shot and hitting our own player who's lying there on the ice in the back of the neck. So it was a special 7 days, you know, and you know, the you know, we'll always have May long weekend, Mike. We'll always, as
it's true.
This series hurt as much as the Edmonton series felt awesome. You know, it was a pretty extreme swing of emotion in 7 short days. And I'll tell you, if there's one thing this series taught us, is that as bad as it might be to be a Jets fan, at least we aren't Oilers and Leafs fans. You know, at least we can win a series now and again. You know?
Right.
And,
no, that's
and,
fair.
And I'll
that's
tell you what, fair. I haven't forgotten about you, Calgary and Vancouver. You both suck as well. So, you know.
Matching out, I like it.
What else can I do?
Going through the stages of grief, are we?
I'm throwing some pennies at some fellow
There
C's.
You go.
Yeah. So, you know, it was just inevitable. I think, you know, you have the right to feel that way as a fan. We're emotional. We can be irrational in what we do. You would hope that the players would be professional.
What you're supposed to is act like a fucking professional.
And go about it in a different way than a fan would. But the inevitability and the lack of spirit I felt as a Jets fan manifested, or at least on a superficial level, seemed to manifest on the players themselves. They didn't play like they had any sense of belief that they could even get this series back to a point at which Scheifele could come back into the lineup.
Yeah, which was a possibility. And I saw a few comments in, you know, on social media and elsewhere where there was a, because the Armia Stahl Perry line, which is sort of their quote unquote fourth line, but I think you said it best, is they kind of have 4 fourth lines.
Yeah.
And that's what stings the most, is that we got stomped by a team with 4 fourth lines. And my natural reaction was like, well, if Corey Perry was out there and Armia and Stahl are out there to be on a fourth line, how come we're pilfing around with Thompson and Lewis and to a certain extent Perreault, but he moved up and down the lineup. And I kind of looked at it, and Armia and Stahl are not fourth liners. And quite honestly, I don't think they're a fourth line in the true sense of the concept. Like, they make 2.6 and 3.25 million respectively. They're both free agents now. And Corey Perry, I do not like him, and I have a little bit on him later on, but he is on league minimum, but that was a, to to my mind, a bit of a lucky break or a very shrewd one, however you'd like to look at it. But it was something where that, if that's your fourth line, they're paying for it. They're paying full price for it. And it's just interesting to me. You look at some of the teams left in the playoffs and just the construction of rosters, like the Oilers, the Leafs, they're all very star top heavy structures that are out. So are we to a certain extent. We fall into that category. We're out too. Colorado is just star laden, but Vegas is giving them a run for their money, and they resemble Montreal. So it's just interesting to me that, you know, and this is why I love the NHL and why hockey's fascinating, is that it's not like basketball, where if you have the two best players on your team, you're going to win 9 times out of 10. Mm-hmm. Hockey's very much different. And it, to me, it emphasizes coaching, and I know we'll get into this in a bit, but all the talent in the world gets you to a certain spot. But after that, there's so many other variables, and we've seen it with the North, is that the team probably with the least talent in the division is now in the, you know, has surpassed all of them. And I found that fascinating.
Just to your point, and I don't mean to take this on a tangent too far, but I do think one of the paradoxes that is emerging in hockey is that the teams that you build to succeed in the playoffs are probably not best positioned to succeed over 82 games, right? So you look at some of the teams recently that have done well in the playoffs. I'm thinking, you know, a St. Louis by, you know, one, and then Washington to a certain degree, although Washington has got some top-end talent as well. But they did a lot of things to their roster in the lead-up to when they won the Stanley Cup to be a little bit heavier, to be a little bit more difficult to play against, and to build that playoff element into their roster. Now, the challenge is balancing those things, and when you get it right, it can work in both the regular season and the postseason. But, you know, I take a look at, you know, Calgary, who has gone to who I think has a team that if they made the playoffs would be in a better position to win in some of these focused short series as opposed to random opponents over the course of 5.5 to 6 months.
I agree with that.
And so I do think Calgary is following the model to win in the playoffs, but they haven't done it well enough to win enough in the regular season. So, you know, it goes back to the things like, yeah, we put so much onus on winning the Stanley Cup, but it's just a tournament, right? It makes a little bit more sense. You know, we should celebrate more the team that wins, who's first place after the President's Trophy, who's first place after 82 games. That should be a much bigger thing than it is. I'm not arguing against what we do with the Stanley Cup, but, you know, I do. They're very fundamentally different things, and I think to be successful in one is very different than being successful in the other in terms of how you construct your roster. So just, that's not what our podcast is all about. We're here to talk about the Jets, but just wanted to build on your excellent point.
Yeah, and so I thought that, and I think this point has been made by several folks on several outlets, but the speed through which Montreal was attacking us in our own end, and you put it succinctly, the inability of RD to move and create and God forbid, you know, skate the puck out themselves, really to me highlighted the what I think now is a critical error that we made in sitting all of our young talent. And I know it's easy in a small sample size in an isolated bubble that was this series to look at Caulfield. You know, look at some of their young talent and the contributions that they made and the speed through which they processed the game, et cetera, et cetera, and say, well, we have that level of talent, especially on the D end. If we had consistently played them throughout, then we wouldn't have looked so dead tired and wiped at the end of the series. And I tend to agree. It's probably a little knee-jerk analysis, but I can't help but look at our back end near the tail end of the series and think, really? You know, Harkins couldn't have given away a goal on a penalty kill. Hinola couldn't have done a little bit better job breaking out of our end when they've sent two men deep. I thought that was something that, A, cost us a significant chance at maybe turning it around, and that B is something that should be corrected for the future.
Mike, I think you're spot on, and I think this is the brilliant place to segue into the flight plan. Where do the Jets go from here?
Fortunately, we have a plan, Professor Frink.
Hi, good evening, ladies.
Wait, darling, what's the plan?
All right, just take your seat, just take your seat.
Because yep. I think the point you raised speaks directly to, and I think we're going to take a look at two different things in the flight plan.
Yep.
We're going to talk about the coach, which goes directly to your thoughts there. And then we're going to talk about how we see the players, what do we see the roster moving forward. So let's go to the flight plan.
Excellent. So I would like, if it's okay with you, I'd like to start with the players. And then because I think it transitions nicely into both the coach and the GM. I had a look at this, and I sort of broke the roster down into a number of categories. And the way I had broken it out was like this. So there are sort of for sure going to be back forwards, for sure going to be back D, for sure going to be back goalie. We've taken care of that already. RFAs that we potentially or might re-sign. UFAs that we think or probably believe should be gone. And then UFAs that may be around or that we might re-sign. And then I thought some of this ties into who we're going to expose in the expansion draft.
Yeah.
So the simple one, obviously, Hellebuyck will be here. The Simpsons style, I don't know if you've seen that Simpsons episode where Homer Simpson is the coach of Bart's football team.
Yeah, okay.
And he's like, this is the easiest part of my job, making cuts.
Good practice, team. Okay, it's time for the easiest part of any coach's job, the cuts. Now, while I wasn't able to cut everyone I wanted to, I have cut a lot of you.
And so, Thompson, you're cut. Lewis, gone. Forbort, you're cut. Ben, see ya. Pullman, bye-bye. Like, those guys right there. I don't know what they're going to do, but if I was in charge, heaven forbid, people would be getting pennies thrown at them, then those guys are obviously just sort of no-brain. Well, it's been a slice. See you later. Then the for sure guys are Wheeler, Connor, Shifley, Ehlers, PLD, and Lowry. And on D, the Morrissey and DeMello. And then it gets a little tricky where we have RFAs in Pionk, Stanley, and Kopp. And then UFAs in Stastny, Perreault, and Toninato. And so with that sort of core of players, I obviously think that, you know, we have to expose a couple forwards, we have to expose a D, and we have to expose a goalie. And I wanted to turn it to you. You're in charge. I just put the GM hat on you. Who do you keep? How would you like to construct the roster moving forward?
Well, I agree with you on most of those guys leaving. And it's not just because they're older. It's because I don't think they have enough foot speed to play at the pace that we need to play at. They can't move the puck out of the defensive zone like we need them be able to. I have a little bit of a soft spot for Trevor Lewis. I thought he was okay, although if we move on from him, we move on from him. I do think we need to get the young guys into the lineup, and there are some non-performing assets that are taking up spots in the lineup that are not moving us ahead. I think we need to move on from. I do think because of their cap hit number, we need to move on from Paul Stastny and Matthew Perreault. Okay, I have a sentimental
to both. I
yes. Do. I think we could re-sign them for a reasonable price. I think that Paul Stastny's his salary, which is $6.5 million, or his AAV, pardon me, I shouldn't use the term salary. His AAV is $6.5 million. We have to cut that in half. Matthew Perreault is 4.25 or 4.1 something. That has to come, you know, down to a million five,
I mean, between that range. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if we want to keep those guys, I think it's possible, but for me, I love Paul Stastny. He can't skate well enough for me. And I think when we have people like Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, Cole Perfetti, mm-hmm. You know, who had an incredible year, World Juniors, gold, or pardon me, silver, gold at the World Championships.
Yeah,
had an unbelievable growing experience with the Moose. I mean, he probably had 2 or 3 years of experience into this 1 year, Jansen Harkins is doing anything and everything that those more senior and older forwards are doing. Same with Christian Vesalainen. I'm not a huge fan, but he's doing nothing different than those guys. And, you know, maybe he can grow. Those guys need to be into the lineup. You know, when I see, and then we're kind of coming back to the coach here. It's like, yeah, they're young. Coach them. You're supposed to be an expert coach. Coach them.
Yes.
Okay. And it all comes back, not at all of it, but in terms of making this point, look what happened with Logan Stanley this year. The only reason he got a chance was because Tucker Poolman was placed under COVID protocol and Dylan DeMello was away from the team for the birth of his child. Stanley may never have been or may never be a first or second pair defender, but we found out this year, almost by accident, that he's actually a decent NHL player. Maybe he'll always and only be a third pairing defenseman, but I feel that he can play. Okay. Yep. And we wouldn't have found that out unless it wasn't this convergence of circumstance that thrust him into the lineup. And that's Paul Maurice was forced to play him. Okay. And most Jets fans, I think there was a group that wanted to see him succeed and liked him. And so they feel good. And then there's another swath that thought this was a bad pick. He's probably never going to be an NHL player. You know, and they've changed their tune. I think it's pretty universal amongst Jets fans that they think they see a future for him in our lineup. Mm-hmm. Does anyone see him anchoring the point on the power play? No. Should he be getting more than 15 minutes a night? Probably not. I think he's an NHL player. And the ironic part is we found out by accident. So let's get somebody
despite
ourselves.
Yeah, and, you know, real quick harken back to right before the playoffs, Maurice came out publicly and said, our last D-man, it's going to be it's sort of a three-person battle, including Ben, in order to see who's going to get those minutes. And that was even prior to Stanley getting his chance and proving himself to be an effective defenseman. And even after he'd shown that, there was still Maurice's inclination to say, nah, you're still trying out for this position on the third defensive pair. It is ingrained in Maurice somehow that I do not trust or want or have the wherewithal to coach young guys. So I'm just going to get old stiffs in there because at least they'll be in some sort of right position when we get scored on.
Yeah, I just want to add, I mean, Logan Stanley actually showed an inclination and effort to carry the puck out of his zone
and
to make a pass.
You.
He's so much better, and I know it's a low bar. He's so much better than Jordy Benn or Derek Forbort on that. And he actually can move the puck out, you know, in a way that I didn't see from those other guys. You know, because he's so tall, he will naturally get in positions where he's athletically challenged, right? And he will always be in some tough spots. He's not Zdeno Chara, right? So he will have some breakdowns in the defensive zone. But I think his all-around game is very decent. It's very third. I see him kind of locked in as the left side of our third pairing for a long time. And I don't think that's a bad thing. You need to have someone there that's... I think the big problem is in front of him. And I don't think he's a candidate to play with Pionk. I don't. We need to figure out whether that's Heinola or Sandberg or some combination of both of them, or do we trade one of those guys and get a more like a 25-year-old type player that from another team kind of thing? I don't know. So I don't know. Do you want to move on to rip the coach, or do you have more to say about the players?
The only thing, because you just mentioned it, and I just wanted to follow up. Do you think we'll re-sign Pionk? And Kopp is the other guy that,
fair enough. They're RFAs. They're going nowhere. We control them.
I just thought maybe we would, if somebody gave them an offer, we'd.
Yeah, I don't think any of them will be offer sheeted. None of them are good enough for that. I mean, there is a grand reluctance amongst NHL GMs to offer sheet players.
Fair, that's true. It's a lot different than, say, football. Even football is not.
But as a restricted free agent, a lot of things have to happen. First, I think the Jets will make qualifying offers to each one of them. Okay, so that's the first way they go from RFA to UFA. And I don't think any of them will be in a position to command a salary that we can't meet. And that's with $10.5 million coming off of the salary cap at the very minimum with Stastny and
Perreault. Yeah.
I don't think that Pionk is in a position to be asking for $6 million or $5 million a year. I think it will be in the range of, you know, $4 million, $4.5 million, and I think that's affordable. So he's basically taking a Perreault's contract. And, you know, I think it's reasonable to think that Kopp won't get more. He may get the same term, but he would get a contract similar to Lowry's, right? It's not going to be above that. And those are, I think those guys will be very affordable. I think that it's possible, and maybe it's the simplest, to bring back Pullman if he'll sign for not a lot of money. You know,
what's not a lot of money? Negative money? Can he pay us?
He could sponsor this podcast.
Yeah, if he sponsors this podcast, I'm going to retract everything.
I'll tell you what, if he gave this podcast half of what Dan gives me, then he's in.
You keep joking about that, and I'm starting to think that this is real. I can't get a hold of Dan. I think you're just rolling in a sea of first gold money over there.
Oh, he's got call display.
So, without further ado, I think we should get to the Maurice and maybe a bit on the Chevy bit. I'll be succinct. He's got to go. And I've been saying this for months now. And I don't, it might sound like I do, but I don't harbor any ill will towards the man. He seems like a very pleasant fellow and someone that if you sat down for dinner with him, he would probably be very fascinating and lots of great stories. And it sounds like a great family guy. Like that means anything, or I have any idea whether or not that's true. It's just, there's too many factors here where I think he has failed. And the first and foremost being, you know, we discussed it, just a complete reluctance to play young players. I think anytime your team performs and gets swept out of a playoffs in that manner, you've lost the room in some way. Are you good at speeches? Yes. Great. Speeches only get you so far. There's a lot more to it. So I would be, but I'm hesitant to say that I'm confident that that's going to happen. I'm going to be furious is probably a strong word, but I'm going to be really upset if we're in October and it's game one of the regular season and he's behind the bench. As a fan, that's going to bug me. And I hope that Chevy and whoever else is making decisions has a wake-up call and says, we need some fresh blood in here.
You know, I agree, but I tried to think about this in a different way. I tried to remove the problem from the person. Okay, so I think we could agree that Paul Maurice has been around long enough that he's probably not going to change his spots, right? He's going to be who he's going to be.
Yeah.
But let's not say that's, like, I think what we need is a refresh in the coaching staff. And I agree, I'm not confident that Paul Maurice and Charlie Huddy are the best coaches to guide the Jets through that refresh. But they could do it hypothetically. I think there needs to be a shift away from a desire to have more senior level players through the roster and have a sincere commitment to work some of the younger players that we mentioned previously into the lineup, work with them on a daily basis, work with them on a weekly basis, work with them on a monthly basis, set performance goals for them, work through the tough times with the support of management, knowing that, listen, if we don't achieve X, we're not going to put it on you because our game plan is to integrate these young players into an otherwise good roster. I think that needs to be the game plan. Do I think that's going to happen? No, highly probable not. And I'll tell you why. I've developed a theory about Paul Maurice, and it builds on some of the ideas that we've bandied about on this podcast in previous episodes. As we have discussed, I feel he really caters to the veterans in the room. And I see that was reflected in in the interviews today, a lot of the senior members were saying how much they liked him. Okay. I think Paul Maurice, as we've discussed, has learned long ago that if you have the support of the senior leadership in the room, you're probably protected from getting fired.
Yep.
So he caters to them at the expense of the younger players. And here's where I had a small epiphany this week on this matter. This is why we play at such a slow and plodding pace. Rarely do the Jets do anything while moving at speed. It's a pass from one stationary player to another.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
why is this relevant? Because such an approach protects the older veteran players who could no longer play effectively at a higher tempo. This approach shields their weaknesses and forces the younger, quicker players to play a style that suits the older players, which would be fine other than it absolutely runs against the direction of where the league is going. The NHL is no longer dominated by older veteran players.
Yeah.
Today's best players are fast, young, and aggressive. The slow, methodical, and plodding are being pushed out of the league. And our coach still caters to him. And that's why you hear such support from the veteran players, because he's, you know, I'm not going to say it's all about money, right? But he's getting extra years on the back end of their careers because he's catering to them on the ice, not just in the dressing room, you know, but on the ice. He's forcing the younger players to play outside. He's not playing to the strengths of the truly best talent on our team. He's protecting the older guys, right? And that's why he wants so many older guys in the room so that they outnumber the younger guys. Anyways, I was in the shower. I was washing my hair. This occurred to me, and I wanted to share it with you, Mike.
I like it. I like the underlying conspiratorial aspect to it to a certain extent. You know I love those. So you cleaned it up there a bit at the end for me, because when you were going through it, I was like, well, that doesn't explain the Hendrixes and the Bens and his propensity to play those guys. But I get your point, where it's like they don't have to be superstar old players. They just have to be old guys who I cater to or put on my roster or play significant minutes, and they're going to outnumber the younger guys, and that way I control sort of autonomy in the locker room. And you know, Nick Ehlers is a good case test. Like, his time of ice, he was statistically the best player the Jets had 5-on-5 this season without question. And yet in the playoffs and in elimination games, him and whatever line he was on were, you know, they were in the 16 to 18, sometimes 19 minute range, which to my mind is preposterous. Does Nick Ehlers have a kind of tendency sometimes to make somewhat incorrect hockey plays or try to force the puck in situations that probably don't need to be forced? Yes. And was Liney like that sometimes too? Yes. What do both those players have in common? I don't think they have Paul Maurice's full support in terms of how they're utilized and how they're deployed for the Winnipeg Jets. So I do agree with you. I think that it's, I'm not sure I can go to the point where this is sort of a mastercraft plan where he's thinking, my primary role here is to keep my job. And to do that, I need to sort of construct this young against old dichotomy. And I can achieve longevity in that way. I think it's just innate. I think he gravitates towards more of an old school mentality, and I think he just inherently trusts the older players and schemes for that. So again, not too far off from what you're saying, but I just can't fathom how Chevy can look at, you know, what is it, a couple playoff series, we've been swept in two of the last three unceremoniously. I don't understand how we can look at that as an organization and go, you know, Maurice was doing his Maurice best at the end of it. He's like, oh, this team's just on the rise. We're just on the uptick. It's like, your captain's old, and he should be a third-line winger now. Scheifele's not getting any younger. Like, our window was this year and maybe a couple years in the future. And quite honestly, Maurice, you cost us this year because we have, like you say, and I agree with the move here is to play the young guys, but they all could have had a year under their belt and some playoff experience. We weren't going to win the Stanley Cup this year. Why not? But we're starting from square one with that. Like the rhetoric here that it's, oh, we're just getting started and we've got plenty of years to come is horseshit. Like, it doesn't make any sense, and it's coach speak. And it's coach speak who probably, if he's really self-effacing, would look at it and go, I'm going to get shit-canned here in a bit. So I'm just going to grasp the straws and hopefully blind management into keeping me on another year.
Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
Well, tell me how you really feel, Mike.
Sorry, I got a little saucy there.
No problem, I love it.
Well, this is a good time to introduce our first recurring sponsor, the Men's Sartorial Society is back, and they have some more advice for us, fellas. Give it a listen.
Gentlemen, did you just come from the rodeo and need to go directly to a work function? Are you trying to look youthful but professional in your 40s? Or are you going to Vegas and don't own a suit? The Men's Sartorial Society has the solution for all these problems. A blazer with jeans. Men, we understand that sometimes style is hard. That's why we've made it easy. Take whatever you're wearing now, put a blazer on, and voila! You now look like 98% of middle-aged men. This look is versatile too. You want to look like a tech billionaire? Wear your blazer and jeans with a turtleneck. How about an aging rock star? Just a blazer and t-shirt will do, thank you very much. The beauty is that neither your blazer nor your jeans need to even fit properly. The important thing is that it looks like you tried. Court date, jeans and a blazer. Kids recital, jeans and a blazer. Hosting a TSN hockey show called The Overdrive? You know the answer. Ryan Seacrest says, the combination of any t-shirt with a blazer and jeans is foolproof. That's Ryan fucking Seacrest. Your mom loves Ryan Seacrest, and who are you to disagree with your mom? The Men's Sartorial Society. We've given up now, too.
We're back. Well, as a sport coat blazer fan, I enjoy when the Sartorial Society opines on things that are familiar to me and probably familiar to you. Good work.
Well, is the Sartorial Society a not-for-profit? Because I haven't gotten any checks, and apparently they're coming back to sponsors now. Maybe you have your own money line over there, okay?
I'm touching my nose. Okay. We're going to go, we'll transition to a segment. Basically, was the Winnipeg Jets season a success overall? And Vaughn, I'll let you kick us off in terms of what your thoughts are following obviously a disappointing playoff sweep.
Yeah, originally we talked about this on the Lost episode and on the Black Hole episode, and I've built on it a little bit. But I think to set the context for it, I see there being two parts to this question. Does winning a playoff round make any season a success? And does winning a playoff round this season make this specific season a success from the Jets' perspective? And I have to admit, I think in both cases, the answer is yes. A season can be both imperfect and successful. I do think the season was a success, but not a complete success, nor an unqualified success. So I think there is a bit of a continuum there. And yeah. I do think we get past the first measure of what success is. And where it starts, I don't know. I think because it's different from roster to roster. I think of Ottawa this year that didn't make the playoffs, but we're playing some pretty good hockey at the end of the season. It's not hard to look at that and say, they were supposed to be a tire fire, and they were for a while, but they certainly weren't at the end of the year. So, and as we've discussed previously, setting the standard of success at a Stanley Cup win is an impossible benchmark to have each and every year, especially for the fan. Like, I want this to be fun, right?
Yeah.
Certainly good. That should be every team's goal at the start of the season, but it shouldn't be the only benchmark to determine whether this season was successful or not. In the immortal words of Ricky Bobby, if you're not first, you're last. That's not an actual basis for determining real life success. And just so you know, listener, no athlete actually pisses excellence.
Well, Dak, here's the deal. I'm the best there is, plain and simple. I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence.
And those who do usually end up with a teammate sleeping with their wife. I'm looking at you, Eric Lindros.
Oh, shots at Eric Lindros. I like it. If he listens to it, which he doesn't, he'll forget it in 3 seconds because of the concussions anyway.
Exactly. That's too soon? I pick on the weak guy.
Well, that was excellent. It's funny. We taped this segment in the Black Hole episode. It's in the ether now. And it's funny, my position at the time after we had swept the Edmonton Oilers was resoundingly yes. This was a success, regardless of what, I think I said this, regardless of what happens in any of the subsequent rounds, this was a success. The Jets tested my mettle and my resolve, and they went out and said, you think so? Well, we're going to stink up the joint so bad, we're going to taint all your positive vibes. But regardless...
Hold my beer moment, right?
Yes.
Oh, you think this is a success? Hold my beer.
Exactly. So it's something where I agree that in totality it was a success. I went quickly and looked through some of the preseason projections from and standing projections from, you know, some of the more notable sites. Like NHL.com, 5 of the 12 sort of quote-unquote experts didn't have the Jets or had the Jets making the playoffs. So that's 7 of 12 that thought we wouldn't make it at all. Sportsnet, of the 21 sort of quote-unquote staff, only one had Winnipeg in the semis, and that was a shout-out to Mark Spector. That includes good old Weeb's World. I think he actually had the Jets not making the playoffs. ESPN, we were 19th overall, and the Sporting News, we were picked to finish last. So what does that mean? Not much. I don't hold a lot of stock in some of these preseason predictions, and I quite honestly, I don't think a lot of people put a lot of thought into them. But I did fall in that relative spectrum. I did think we had a shot to make the playoffs. I thought it might be tight right up until the end, and we almost made it that. But we coasted in rather easily. And the sweep against Edmonton, regardless of in now sort of context how it looks, it was still, we beat a team that beat up on us in the regular season with the greatest hockey player in the world right now. That's a victory and something that I think can be built on. I do think there were, as you know, we've talked about on this podcast and others, I think there was a lot of missed opportunity this season. And I think what we haven't mentioned is that goalie windows are small, like the Carey Prices of the world, where you're paying your goalie $10 million. I think I read somewhere where he's the first player or the first goalie to get paid $10 million and for the team to advance into a second round. Like, it's that's not a winning formula for, you know, over a decade, right? To just say, well, we have this goalie and they're going to be great for 7, 8, 9 years. I'm optimistic that Hellebuck's got a number of good years left in him, but we all know how quickly that can drop. All of a sudden they come into camp, they're just not as good anymore. You know, we saw it in the Montreal series. Hellebuck was good, but he wasn't as lights out as he was in Edmonton, and that was one of the contributing factors of why we got stomped. So, long story short, basically, is that, yeah, it was a success, but it's tempered or a measured success, and one that I think, I just can't help it. I can't help but my opinion is tainted a bit by how we ended things off.
Of course it would be. I mean... and we're even a couple days removed, we're still not completely, you know, it's still a bit of an open wound, right? So I think it's very natural to feel that way. And the one thing I struggle with as a fan, and I don't like, is when other people who follow the team set an impossible standard. And it's just like they want to be miserable, so they're setting up a standard that can't be met so they can justify their own miserableness.
Jay Mischkowski? Sorry, I don't even know Jay.
You know, I don't even, like, there's some more of the, I don't know their names off the top of my head. I follow a bunch of Jets fans on Twitter.
I do too. I know exactly what you're saying.
And Like, come on, we're never going to win the Stanley Cup. Like, I don't know. Like, if we got to the Stanley Cup and lost in overtime in the seventh game, they'd still be angry. They'd still blame Paul Maurice. I mean, this is the town that loves the backup quarterback, right? Who's ever in there is doesn't know what they're doing and whatever the case may be. And I've really tried on this podcast, and I try as a fan to be balanced. I try to, you know, when we go after Paul Maurice, I think that we want to do so in an articulate and thoughtful way, in the sense that it's not because we don't like his tie or like his tie, you know, it's because we're struggling to understand why things are going on the ice the way they're going on. And you know, the whole process of this podcast has been a very interesting one for me, because we've talked about a lot more things in a lot more detail than you otherwise would if you didn't have a podcast. And a lot of the things, like even early in the year when the Jets were doing very well, we were questioning their process, mm-hmm. right? We were talking about the inability of their defense to move the puck out of their zone weeks and weeks ago. So the things that we don't know how to fix these things, right? We're not hockey experts, right? But we're smart enough to say, here are the problems, and they're going to continue to be problems unless things change. Well, how would you fix them? Well, then that really comes into, you know, the challenging part, because we're not professional coaches, right? But we're not off base either. You know, so I'd like to think that, you know, this year, as frustrating as it was at times, there was some good times, and it was good. And perhaps I did myself a little bit of a disservice by looking so closely at the games and seeing the faults for what they were, and that detracted from some of my fun. Because at the end of the day, I don't care if the Jets win or lose the Stanley Cup. I just want to have fun following them. You know what I mean?
Yep,
their
enough.
Victories are not my personal victories, right? I'm not a better person the deeper they go into the playoffs. They're completely independent of one another. I just want to have fun watching the Jets game. I want to have fun talking with the Jets, talking about the Jets with you, Mike. I want to go have a beer with you guys and have fun talking about the Jets. That's the importance of the Jets, not whether they win the Stanley Cup or not. And that's what frustrates me. Anyways, sorry.
Yes, no, well said. And I personally wake up every day and tie my personal health and well-being to the Jets. So
some people do.
No, you see it quite a bit, that people really, there's a blurred line, right, where it's taken personal, that if the Jets don't win the Stanley Cup or Paul Maurice isn't fired, then the sky is falling. And I don't think we're at any level in that way. Like, you know, I was being a bit hyperbolic when I'm saying, expressing my distrust of Maurice if he was back for next year. But you know what will happen? The puck will drop, and I'll enjoy the Jets again. And if there are things to criticize, great. And if there are things to celebrate, that's even better. So, yeah, I don't think that at the end of the day it was disappointing. But, you know, now I'm just looking forward to next year.
With that, I think we go to the last call.
Hey guys, just letting you know it's last call. Almost time to wrap it up.
All right. I guess a couple things we'll cover here. Next steps for the podcast. I think we're going to chat a little bit about taking a break for a little bit. And Mike, I'm going to ask you, are you going to continue to watch the playoffs? And do you care if the Canadians continue to win? And do you want to see them in the Stanley Cup?
As of right now, I will not, and I do not, Sam, I am, because I first of all, you know, you got a little PTSD. I need a break for a tick. But the other part of it is that, and I understand, and I think I'm probably in the minority, and I think maybe you're with me, is that I hear that quite a bit, where it's like, well, now as a Canadian, you're obligated to cheer for the one Canadian team left in the playoffs. Am I? Why is that? I just spent 2 weeks reviling and basically getting a hate on for a team, and now I just flip a switch to say, well, they're a Canadian team, so I have to cheer for them. So, you know, if they win, great. But I'm not going to be actively watching or rooting for them. I saw that the CN Tower, they colored up in Montreal Canadiens colors. And again, if I was in Toronto, I'd be like, what? Like, we can't win a playoff series to save our life, and now we're just jumping ship. I know it's an old school and unnuanced and not progressive way of thinking that this sort of, well, if my team's not in it, I don't really care about anybody else. But I am's who I am's, as Popeye says. Mm-hmm. And so I just won't. I think I'll probably watch the Cup Final. And I do watching Colorado games because they're a fascinating team. But as of right now, I don't have any concrete plans. This is one of those take my board game and go home scenarios.
You've done that before.
I have. Oh, I have.
You flipped some tables.
I have. I definitely have.
Mike, I'm going to tell you, I'm absolutely not going to watch the rest of the playoffs, nor am I going to cheer for those stinky Canadians just because they're the last remaining Canadian team. I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, I am the quintessential jilted lover, the scorned sweetheart, the jealous paramour, and the resentful mistress.
My fanatic
love only has one object, the Winnipeg Jets, as I've joked before. And it is true. I'm much more of a Jets fan than I am a hockey fan. Of course, I will tune into the odd game, but I will not follow the rest of the playoffs religiously. I'll poke my head in every now and again, but I need some time, as do we as a podcast, right? Just to kind of transition, I think it's fair to say there's no set plan going forward. We do want to come back for next season. The expansion draft is July 21st.
Yeah.
The entry draft is July 23rd and 24th. So we might have something before and after that. We will probably have something before next year. I think it's fair to say we've really enjoyed doing this. And want to continue to do it, but we're gonna take a little bit of a break.
Yes, absolutely. And you've got all that mining money, so you're gonna be busily spending it. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I do. We want to touch on the expansion draft and the entry draft, and you know there might be bits of news that percolate from time to time, and you know formulate a plan moving forward. I made the joke at the top about Paul Maurice. Unlike Paul Maurice, we'll be back next year, and so it's something where we get sappier at the end, but I've really enjoyed doing this with you, Vaughn, so it's been a pleasure.
Well, the pleasure's been mine, Mike. I really appreciate all the time you put in. For those that you have listened or who are listening, Mike does all the production stuff and he puts in a lot of time, and he does a fantastic job, and I really, truly appreciate it because I've had some fun. But before we sign off this episode and we take a bit of a hiatus, I would like to extend a sincere thanks to everyone who has made this show a small part of their week and part of their yes. Jets fandom. Hopefully we made it fun, that we made you laugh from time to time, and perhaps on occasion we made you think a bit. We hope to be back later this summer, and for next season, we hope we can meet you back in the airport lounge in the very near future. So, fellow travelers, that's it for this season of the podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, on Facebook, even though we don't do anything there, and check us out on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening, and be sure to come back next year to the Airport Lounge, because the first round will always be on us. Until then, go Jets, go.
Crush that ending. Well done.